Welcome to the Rosie on the House Arizona Hour, driven by Sanderson Ford.
Your weekend wake-up tradition.
It's Rosie on the House.
I have definitive proof it's a beautiful Arizona morning, even though the sun's not up. There was no 8.5 earthquake this week, followed by a 6.1, 6.4. We'll talk about that a little later. What would you do if you woke up and your house was sitting on your cars? Be a tough way to get to work. And if you're waking up this year in 1984, your Arizona Highways magazine features The Rise of Phoenix, in which they quote notable rising celebrities and their thoughts on Phoenix. Alice Cooper says, you know what's wrong with this place? 75 golf courses. That's what's wrong. Too many days just made for playing 36 holes. So when I have to write a gruesome song like Monster Dog, I have to leave home. I got to leave Scottsdale and go someplace bleak like Massachusetts. Glenn Campbell said, Phoenix is the best, most comfortable. Well, wait a minute. I don't want to praise it too much. It could get messed up by being overcrowded. Maybe I'll just say I like the desert. And one Stevie Nicks said, I was born in the desert, and I'm still a desert baby. Desert is very healing to me. And my Phoenix home is where I go to write songs and let the creative juices flow.
Unfortunately, she doesn't live here anymore, and she regrets that. She writes her songs. I guess she has a house in L.A. now. But the last time Fleetwood Mac was here, which was last year, she emphasized, it's always nice to come back home.
Phoenix is our featured staycation destination all month long. We did it as a favor to our mountain inhabitants. They said, you know, as much as y'all come up here to ski in the winter, we're coming down to the desert in the summer to get a break from the cold on the weekends. Why don't y'all put a desert staycation in the winter? So we did, and we've got Grand Canyon University as our staycation destination. And around the state today, we also have the Casa Grande Home Show. Our promotion team is at. You can find Lance and Jen and the Rosie on the House Sanderson Ford Transit at the Casa Grande Home Show. We'll hear from them as it starts here at about 10 o'clock.
I'll tell you, we've got some interesting things going on around the state just in general. For those of you that love finding activities with your kids to get outside and enjoy the great Arizona outdoors, Game and Fish has a couple things going right now in particular. You can log on to their website, AZGFD, and take a look at the webcams that they've got set up across the state. They've got one on a bald eagle nest up in above Lake Pleasant and above Cottonwood. Then they've got the sandhill crane camera down around Wilcox. As a matter of fact, on February 8th, you can actually go with the Game and Fish photographer, George Andraco, and he will teach you how to photograph and be right in the middle of the sandhill cranes. So that is a sandhill crane photography tour on February 8th. That would be a great event to round up your nieces, your nephews, your children, your grandchildren, and get down there and enjoy Southeast Arizona with no less than George Andraco to teach you a little bit about photography. So that's just a few of the things going on around the great state of Arizona. Romy, I think you've been there as a kid. Have you ever walked into the Hall of Flame Museum on Van Buren?
Hall of Flame, mm-hmm. I don't believe.
Well, we've invited two very special guests from the Hall of Flame. Chuck Montgomery, who's the executive director of the museum, and Mark Moorhead, who's curator of education. And I was very blessed to get a very quick tour of the facility yesterday, and our topic later in the day is home safety and things not to get involved in to keep yourself safe. I'll give you a hint. Saran wrap is one, and flip-flops on a ladder is another. But we'll get to that a little bit later. But we thought, with safety being kind of the issue of the day, it'd be a great opportunity to bring guests from the Hall of Fame Museum and talk a little bit about what y'all are showing off down there. Chuck, good morning.
Good morning, Rosie. Thank you for having us on today. We really appreciate it.
Man, we appreciate y'all taking the time to come down. 70,000 square feet under roof of historical firefighting equipment that actually goes as far back as the early 1700s.
Absolutely amazing. It's amazing to me every morning when I walk into the place to think that our very earliest fire truck was around and operating and putting out fires 51 years before we were a country.
Wow.
And that really puts us in a league of itself.
Well, as an admirer of engineering equipment, I mean, y'all have some beautiful actual pieces of art that you call fire trucks.
Yes, sir, we do.
I mean, there are a couple down there that are just absolutely gorgeous. How do you start a fire museum?
Well, this one started quite uniquely. George Getz, actually, was given a fire truck in 1955 by his wife, Olive. She gave him a truck as a surprise, as a Christmas present.
That's a surprise Christmas present. Yeah. Do you have to put a red bow on that, or you just get it delivered to the front drive?
Certainly. It better be red, for sure. So their son, Bert, picked that truck up and got it home and rolled it up in the driveway for Christmas. They were very excited. And right away, Mr. Getz got on the truck, started driving around the neighborhood, and he was absolutely hooked. And from that point on.
Not in the firefighting fraternity at all. This just started as a fluke gift.
That's right, as a fluke gift. They were driving on into Chicago and saw it in a lot. And he said, it'd be fun to own one of those. And I think Olive made note of that and told Bert that we need to go down and get that. So they arranged to go pick the truck up. They stored it for a few weeks before Christmas and gave it to him as is. And he started then, of course, over time.
And this is the 50s.
It's 1955, yes.
Okay.
So by the 1960s, he already had enough trucks to start his first museum in Lake Geneva. So he wasted no time, got right to buying fire trucks and collecting them.
Well, y'all's collection is unbelievable. Even like this one piece that we were talking about dates back to 1725. It's a manual crank, of course. What's the story on that unit itself?
Well, it's obviously it's a pretty unique unit, as you saw, and fairly hardy. And, it took about 20 folks to operate it, and it kind of incorporated the hand-pumping motion of moving the arms back and forth to pump water. But then up on top of it, two people kind of rode it like a stairmill, like a stairmaster. And between the 20 folks on there, they were able to pump about 60 gallons a minute of water. So buckets are coming in, and water's shooting out the nozzle, and Mark's got some specifics on the name of the unit and where it resided.
And yeah. Mark, in the 1700s, how do you source 60 gallons a minute?
Well, and that could be very, very tricky. I mean, first of all, they didn't have, even if you had a fairly adjacent water source, they didn't have good fire hose yet, at least not in England. And so you continued with the bucket brigade, just like you see in the Western movies, you know, where their church is on fire and they're all passing water in buckets, and the last guy in line gets as close to the fire as he can, which usually isn't very close, and feebly tries to throw his bucket of water on it. With this, the bucket brigade continued, but you poured it in this little hopper at the back of the unit, and you got guys pumping up and down, and you could shoot, if you really got it going, you get about 60 gallons of water a minute onto the fire, which seems really like not much, but compared to trying to throw buckets of water on a fire, you lose half the bucket on the way to the fire. It was a huge leap forward, and it really changed the world. That one that you're talking about was built in 1725 in London, and by a guy named Newsham, who had a very successful business. They had been invented in Holland, actually, a little before that, in the 1600s. But other countries started knocking off this very successful design. And the British one was very successful. You would have found them, as Chuck said, you know, half a century before the U.S. was a country, 7 years before George Washington was born. You would have found them in American cities. But they were also all over Europe. Peter the Great bought a bunch of them for the Russian Empire. And they essentially they were a big factor in what allowed big cities, big metropolitan areas to grow. Because you could – not that there weren't still big, terrible citywide fires. There absolutely were, of course, like the Great Chicago Fire most famously. But it gave you a real chance to head that off. And so you weren't instead of rebuilding your city a couple of times a decade, you were building your city out.
Well, by the time we've invented saws big enough to cut lumber, I mean the great majority of the communities prior to that were masonry structures. It's what they knew how to work with. And then we figure out how to run big timbers, and now we're going to build out of wood.
Yeah.
And we're going to build the streets too narrow.
Right.
And then we're going to set a fire somehow on the top of the four-story building. And then we're going to ask guys like you to figure out a way to put it out.
Yes.
Well, exactly. And the terrible thing about the wooden structures and them being so close together is you would get these big, terrible fires. They were horrible, but the backhanded blessing of them is that when they rebuilt, they figured out how to rebuild cities much more fire-resistant and much more safe. Chicago, that was particularly true of. They started building out of brick and stone and things like that after that. And the cities became much more durable, and other cities followed that example.
Well, we've just talked about one piece that you have in a museum that covers 70,000 square feet. It's an absolutely fabulous museum. The closest I have to a family member as a firefighter is my grandfather was in the movie A Long Hot Summer.
Uh-huh.
And all you see of him is dipping a bucket in a horse trough and his behind running away from the camera in a bucket brigade.
No.
To put out a fire in the barn.
There you go.
Yeah.
But that's the closest I've got to a relative in the firefighting department right now.